Hey, Project Big Screen listeners, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
What happens when you lock 18 coworkers in an office for 1 week to compete for $250,000 of cash? This is Surviving Barstool Season 5, presented by Rumble Premium. Each episode released 3 hours early, so get it ad-free before anyone else, only when you join Rumble Premium. Surviving Barstool premieres Sunday, August 9th at 5 p.m. on Rumble Premium, and everywhere else at 8 p.m.
To infinity and beyond!
The Lord tells me he can get me out of this mess, but he's pretty sure you're fucked.
This is why you fail.
You can't handle the truth!
Maybe. Maybe not. Maybe fuck yourself.
Say hello to my little friend!
You'll shoot your eye out, kid.
Say what again? Say what again? I dare you. I double dare you, motherfucker. Say what one more goddamn time.
What we've got here is failure to communicate.
Roads? Where we're going, we don't need roads.
Are you not entertained? Are you not entertained?
He hit our son.
Happy birthday, Molly.
Welcome to Lights, Camera, Barstool, episode 102. Maybe the biggest episode of the year. This has been teased as the episode we lose our audience, even though we lost our audience last week over Buster Scruggs. We'll get into that later. We're gonna address Buster Scruggs gate later. But Jeff Lowe, Troy Bolins, Ken Jack, and our reoccurring guest who just missed out on being voted into our Hall of Fame, Mr. James, Mr. Sunday Movies.
I didn't know that. That's disappointing. Well, I'll see you guys later. Fuck. No, thank you for having me back. Yeah.
Actually, it was close between my wife and child and Coley and Tyler who actually won it. And my wife and child were pretty disappointed, but they'll live on to get voted in another day.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, they need more runtime. They need to establish themselves more in the lore of LCB.
Yep, makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. So you're on to here to review Fantastic Beasts and rank the Harry Potter movies. We've teased this for a while. These are the four people in the world who don't love the third Harry Potter movie. So we're coming together to talk about them. Oh, okay.
This is the episode where it'd be equivalent to me asking you guys to rank favorite Thundercats episodes.
That's so hard, though.
That's so hard, right? We'll talk about your methodology in a little bit, Trill. So, yeah, that's that, really. I think we have an ad read. Do we have ad skits? What are you doing this week? We just read
no skits. No skits this week. We couldn't get enough people together. Everyone's out of the office.
We'll read one after. It's Thanksgiving week. We'll have fun with this. We'll do the second ad read later. So we'll just get right into it. Lego Movie 2. The Lego Movie 2 trailer was actually released in theaters along with The Grinch, I think. And people who saw The Grinch saw the Lego Movie 2 trailer, and it wasn't released online until today. So I'll start with Ken Jack. What did you think? The second Lego Movie trailer, the second part. Little Lego pun they have there.
Yeah, I like a Lego movie a lot. As you guys know, I'm a big Chris Pratt guy. I love the first Lego movie a lot. The storyline between both the actual toys and like the real life characters, Will Ferrell, our boy, I thought it was really heartwarming. And this looks a little bit watered down, maybe a little bit not as interesting, but at the same time, still, I'm gonna give it a chance. I can't not love these movies.
Yeah, I'm with you there, guys. I hate to say it. I'd love to say it because this looks great.
You like the desert sequences?
I loved the first Lego movie. Was so surprising to me. It caught me completely off guard because I expected it to be very bad, and it turned out to be one of the better animated movies, not only of that year, of maybe all time. You think about all the crappy animated movies that come out. It's clever. The voice acting's great. What's not to like about it? I even like the Lego Batman movie. I did not like the Ninjago movie.
No,
a stinker. But this one has all the makings of a great follow up, great sequel, and you got Lord Miller producing it, so, and writing it. So yeah, I'm stoked.
Yeah, I think it looks great. The trailer looks great. I think the only thing is, like you guys mentioned, with the Ninjago movie, maybe the brand is watered down a little bit between the first one and now. So I think that's that might work against it a little bit. But on the whole, you know, it's Mad Max with Lego. Sure. That's,
yeah. You
know, the first one surprised me as well. You know, I didn't really think anything of it. You know, I thought it was going to be what the Emoji Movie, you know, ended up being. But no, it was great. And, you know, a lot of the people involved in the first one are back. So it's probably going to be all right.
That's kind of funny to think about. Like, the Emoji Movie probably thought they were capturing lightning in a bottle. Like, yes, Lego did it. We could do it. And it ended up being just absolute fucking ass.
So bad. Yeah. The movie was a complete heat check, too. They just were like, how much can we get away with? And they come back and they're like, well, turns out people don't really like this concept very much.
Is Ninjago that popular a brand? I mean, I guess it is, but you think you'd go with like pirates or Star Wars or something like Ninjago. I don't know. Just doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah. I spend a lot more time in the toy aisle now because of the baby, and I'm scouting out like, you know, when she graduates to 1-year-old, 2-year-old, what we're going to be playing with. I see Ninjago there. I think I do. At least I used to see Ninjago. Oops. I was in the toy aisle before I had the baby, but it's popular in the sense that they're like toys out in the shelves, but I don't think it's popular in terms of an established intellectual property, to your point.
Yeah. I think because the first two, or the Lego movie and the Batman movie, they cross generations in the way that Ninjago probably doesn't.
No.
That makes more sense. They should make a Bionicle movie. People still love those, right?
Yeah, people are obsessed with Bionicle.
Yeah.
I did some research on it. I didn't even know about Bionicle until this year, and apparently Bionicle is huge.
I think that was more our age, Jeff. I think that's kind of phased out, or rather phased in after his Trails like toy heyday.
That's actually surprising, because I thought, because Ninjago's pretty old for me. Ninjago was there when I was in elementary school. But I mean, Bionicle. Ninjago, I was told by a coworker a while ago. I was like, is that popular? And I said, yeah, my nephew is obsessed with Ninjago. So I guess like it that's like obviously way ahead of our, I mean, that's ahead of our time. So, our time, something like that.
Did you guys
have about time?
Yeah.
Did you guys have a friend who had Playmobil stuff instead of Lego?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a shame.
It's weird, man.
It's the saddest story. Yeah.
Rough.
I had people who had both. Playmobil always had like really expansive universes, but they always did look like the cheap, crappy knockoff toy. Yeah. Like they were never like fleshed out enough.
Oh, GoBots, that was a good one. Same with Digimon during our Pokemon age. A lot of people try to get away with Digimon, just not at my house. Can't get away with trying to trade me Digimon cards in the Pokemon era.
Or Beyblades.
Oh, Beyblades. They're still hot though.
Yeah. Are they?
Still? Yeah, people still like Beyblade.
Yeah, Lego Movie 2. Actually, there's going to be another movie series we get to later on in news that is similar to toys and food and random weird shit. But first up, or next up, rather, Once Upon a Deadpool. It's the PG-13 reimagining of Deadpool. $1 for every ticket sale goes to, I think it's like Fuck Cancer or something like that. It's a charity for research in fighting cancer. So cool cause. Fred Savage is involved. Trill, I'll start with you on this one. What do you think about the PG-13 reimagining of Deadpool, which is coming out around Christmas time?
I think this kicks ass. I'm glad it's when it first came out, I think we were worried it was just going to be a straight up recut. And there might be scenes that are recut, but at least they're doing some different stuff with it. I think it'll be pretty clever. Deadpool isn't always that clever. It's very on the nose. And maybe this one will be that too, but I like the concept.
I don't know how I feel about it. I think it's good to really release anything as long as the benefit is mostly going towards cancer. That's cool. I'm not sure if I would go out of my way to see this if that wasn't the case, but I guess that's the idea. Trying to raise their money for a good cause. So I can get behind that.
Yeah. To be honest, there was a joke in this that made me laugh out loud, that Marvel Disney, that joke at the end. It's, you know, it's music, but it sucks. Like that really, it caught me off guard how much I liked this trailer, because I had no intention of seeing this. I'm like, I'll catch that eventually. But I still might not see it. I probably won't, because it's a busy time of year, but it looks really funny. So yeah. Fred Savage, you still got it.
I mean, it's one of those things where there's so much coming out still where, like, it's not that I don't have the time, but like there's other things I can see, like smaller movies that are going to start hitting theaters in that time of the year that I'd rather go see and like spend my time in the theaters where I don't know it's necessary that I see it. I'll eventually watch this, but I agree to an extent, Troy. I think I'm a little more into it than I was before.
Well, and it's mostly a recut, you know, so I don't think we'll see it in the theaters, but it'll be fun to catch it when it's digital, because I don't think it's worth seeing the movie again. Even if you add a few scenes, it's like buying a DVD for the extra deleted scenes. I don't do that.
Well, if they release it on DVD and then the money isn't going to cancer, that just means you took money away from cancer. So kind of fucked up.
Yeah, you're helping cancer.
Well, technically, fuck cancer sounds like it's helping cancer too, because wouldn't that produce more cancer? In the technical,
we should look
sense?
Into this. I think we should look into this before we buy tickets.
Unless it's protected sex with cancer, because that'll support no child rearing, cancer fucking. I'm down for that.
Oh, buddy, we're off to a hot start. Hot start.
Let's move on to Replicas. Replicas, a desperate scientist tries to use cutting edge technology to bring his family back. Just want my kids back. Stars Keanu Reeves, Alice Eve, Thomas Middleditch. A trailer for it. It was pretty short. I don't like have any reactions whatsoever, but it's Keanu Reeves. He's made a couple good movies recently. John Wick 3 obviously coming out very soon. What do we Trill, again, I guess we'll start with you. What do we think about Replicas?
I wasn't really feeling this one as much as the PG-13 Deadpool movie. it's like someone watched an episode of Black Mirror and they're like, I got a great idea for a TV show or a movie. Get it out there.
Yeah. So I blogged this when they did the first trailer back in September. And the first trailer, they gave you even less read to work with. They didn't explain the wife and kid angle as much. And I'm a little more interested now, but this concept has been explored, I feel like, 1,000 times, and usually with a much bigger budget than it looks like this has. So I'm not really feeling it. I do like the cast. Alice Eve, obviously amazing. Star Trek Into Darkness, Keanu's awesome. Tom Middleditch, big fan. And it's being directed by Jeffrey Nachmanoff, who's directed Day After Tomorrow. I like Day After Tomorrow. I feel like it wasn't a good movie, but I did enjoy it, if that makes sense. And it's also written by Chad St. John, which number one is my favorite name ever. Chad St. John sounds almost made up. And he wrote London Has Fallen, which was not good, but I believe Trill liked.
Oh, I like those movies. I had a point I was trying to think of. I'm trying to think of more like uploaded consciousness type things. I know it's not exactly the same thing.
Chappie.
Well, Chappie. But what was that one with Ryan Reynolds? Do you remember that one?
Uploaded consciousness.
Well, he was Kevin Costner as well.
I can't remember. It's like he got a new body, though. It's like he was dying. He had to, like, I can't really remember the plot exactly. And then, of course,
Switch Up with Jason Bateman, you're thinking of.
There's that Johnny Depp movie where he uploaded his mind into a computer.
Altered Carbon, we did it all. We love Trill, and that's like the same sort of concept.
There's that. There's Multiplicity with Michael Keaton in the 90s. So it's kind of been touched upon, but it kind of looks like nothing. I mean, Keanu Reeves is good at staying in his lane, I think. I don't think he's, you know, he's really bad because he just kind of, I do this thing, and he's good at it, you know?
He's very good at it, though.
Wick's perfect for him because I think he has to relate to certain emotions to get into a character. And all they had to say to him is, okay, they killed your dog. And he's like, I know what to do.
Selfless was the movie you were talking about.
Yes.
Oh, I think the people are trying to catch that that same lightning in the bottle or whatever. What was that movie with Alicia Vikander and Ex Machina? A lot of people are trying to catch on to that because that was such a weirdly good success, sort of, or cult success. So I think maybe people are trying to grab onto that.
Here's the big one. This is the big news. This is late breaking. I don't know if Trill saw this. I didn't want to put it in our group because I didn't want him to see it. Jason Derulo was cast in Cats. Did you see that? It's breaking news.
I did not. Who's he playing? Do we know?
We do. Can we get a guess from you which cat he will be? Wait, hold on. Let me clear out the ones that have been cast. Idris Elba is Macavity, the villain. Jennifer Hudson is Grisabella, like the main hero. And then Ian McKellen is Gus, the theater cat.
What's Taylor Swift?
Nobody. She could be like Skimbleshanks or someone. I forget. They don't have they don't have her cat yet.
Okay.
Wilson, Jenny, any dots?
Owen Wilson.
Oh. Rebel Wilson. Yeah. Oh.
Wow.
Wow.
These are some crazy cats.
Wow. Are we like actually cats, or are we just dressing up like them? Wow. He's the Rum Tum Man.
He is. He's Rum Tum Tugger. Yeah. So he's like the Elvis cat. Like everyone loves him. He's like suave. He's like a rocker. Yeah. He's like the Elvis cat. Now Taylor Swift, it's like Mongo Jerry or Rumpelteazer. Maybe they don't really, they don't. I mean, we laugh every time. And then James Corden, obviously, there's no way he's not Bustopher Jones. We've established this many, many times. They're cowards and they won't announce it. They won't confirm it, even though we were first to this story before everyone else.
It's almost like Guess Who, where they keep on knocking down the little placards or whatever they're called, and we're slowly eliminating characters. And it's the last one, and we just find out that way that he's Bustopher.
Question. Do you guys think that maybe they're not announcing this on purpose because of some of the backlash that some, I'd say like heavy set news has come out lately with movies, like that movie Insatiable that was about the girl that loses a bunch of weight and everyone's obsessed with her? Like, do you think maybe they are kind of backing down on that because they think once they announce Bustopher Jones, everyone's going to be like, oh, you're making fun of James Corden because he's fat. That's fucked up. Like, I'm thinking maybe that's why.
I don't think so. I say probably not, just because it's James Corden. I think he, you know, just him being a comedian and laughing at himself. And he's like, he's not all that fat, to be honest with you. I think
like a regular guy.
Yeah, he's overweight in the sense of like how people appear on TV, because, you know, most folks on TV hosting shows are typically conventionally attractive, yet a little bit older. And he is he's just a little more heavy than them, and so it's easy to look at him and be like he is a bigger dude. But yeah, James, you hit on the head. Like, you come out here to the States, he's less than average in terms of weight.
Mm. Oh yeah,
is Cats? Have you seen Cats at all, James? Like how I don't think we've talked about Cats with you.
I don't think so. Look, I love musicals, like I really do, but I've never seen Cats, and I fucking hate this. Like, I hate all the names. I hate the names of all the characters. I hate the concept. Any of the music I've heard from it, I don't like. I just think it's stupid. You guys, is it just me?
No, we definitely think it's stupid.
I know you make fun of it.
So heavily.
Yeah. I just thought maybe it's like, you know, maybe you like it ironically, maybe. Anyone?
But we...
Go ahead.
No, yeah, we will get into a movie in a minute where I walked out not knowing what really happened, which, geez, it's the one we're reviewing. And when I left Cats, I had no fucking clue what just happened. I mean, I was like, what did I just watch for 2.5 hours? It is very hard to follow. It's super British. Super British. So there's like these deep cut things that you're like, I don't get that. I don't know how they're going to convert it into this like mainstream movie, because they have, I mean, Jason Derulo, pretty big star, Taylor Swift, mega star, Jennifer Hudson, well known. Like, they have some big names in this, so it's going to be a mainstream movie. I don't know.
Bustopher Jones, we must leave the EU.
The damn Brexit. I would like to play a sampling from the Bustopher Jones song for James, if that's okay with you guys.
I would love that.
Yeah.
Probably gonna be an ad.
Crispy rice in every bite. Yep.
Can you
love this song.
Can you cue up Rum Tum Tugger as well to play right after?
Bustopher Jones is not skin and bone. In fact, he's remarkably fat.
Oh.
He doesn't haunt pubs, he has 8 or 9 clubs, but he's the St. James's Street cat. He's the cat.
Okay, well, that's about the gist of it. And the whole
that
time, Jones, he's looking into a gigantic spoon. If you didn't get the fact that he's a bigger cat,
said he's fat. I got it.
Yeah.
Use the word fat.
They're right out of the gates. They're like, he is fat. This guy is a fat guy.
Just so everybody watching this knows, in this musical, yeah, he's a fat guy.
You have Derulo Cat?
Yeah, I'm playing it now.
He's from Derulo.
Meow.
If you offer me a pheasant, I'd rather have grouse.
Oh, he's so cool.
If you put me in a house, I would much prefer a flat. If you put me in a flat, then I'd rather have a house. If you
he doesn't play by the rules.
Damn.
I can tell. He likes a...
The rules.
Horrible. Yeah. I hope he shouts Jason Derulo.
If he likes flats, he won't like Rum Tum Tigger. Am I right, fellas?
Here is the best song from Cats, though.
The original Conjuring Cat.
It's Mr. Yes.
There'll be no doubt about that. Please, listen to me.
Okay.
Peyton Monopoly's
Conjuring.
We all say, oh, well, I never was there ever. A cat so clever as a magic
Mephistopheles. And all the other cats are on the stage just watching this other guy perform, by the way.
It's like an Inception performance because you're watching them watch him.
The cats don't even get a break. They have to act and watch this cat sing and act like they're actually watching this cat sing in an alley. It's unbelievable how this became the longest running musical on Broadway for so long.
I hate this more. Like, I hated it before, but now I hate it even more. It seems like some fucking, it's left over from the 70s, just fever dream of just like big hair and disco and nonsense. It's just, I don't understand how this got made. It's Andrew Lloyd Webber, so that I understand, but good Lord.
Oh, there was just another casting.
What? Oh, wait, hold on.
You guys want to hear the song?
I do.
Gangnam Style. Yes. Gangnam Style.
Hi. Who's Psy playing?
He's playing Buster for Jones. Huge disappointment.
All right, let's do a quick ad. Stitch Fix is an online personal styling service that finds and delivers clothes, shoes, and accessories to fit your body, budget, and lifestyle. Just go to stitchfix.com/lights and tell them your sizes, what styles you like, and how much you want to spend on each item. You'll be paired with your very own personal stylist who will handpick 5 items to send right to your door. No subscription required. You try them on, you return the ones you don't want, shipping and exchange and returns, all that. It's all free. Get started now at stitchfix.com/lights and you'll get an extra 25% off when you keep all 5 items in your box. That's stitchfix.com/lights to get started today. Go to Stitch Fix. Trill has on a beautiful quarter zip. Not sure if he got it from Stitch Fix or not, but for the sake of this, let's say he did.
I did. I got it from him in the box. Yeah. Came in the mail.
Yep.
Stitch Fix.
So, James, that's something we've been toying with lately is Yoda as a podcast ad pitch man. So it's Yoda pitching Blue Apron and Shari's Berries and all the other classic podcaster wares.
I love it.
Drink Stoilant, you must.
It's sellout. Yeah.
Oh, for sure. Big sellout. YouTube showing free ad-supported movies now. So you get a free movie on YouTube, but with ads. So it's basically watching something on like TNT or TBS when they air movies. Does this interest you? We'll start with you, James, whatsoever.
No, but I think it's a good idea. I honestly do. I think that they should definitely move towards a model more like this. I mean, I'm not sure what it costs them in rights, but I'm sure they make up for it in ads. I do wonder if you've got YouTube Red, which I do, whether that means that you don't get the ads. I assume it doesn't, I assume. But no, yeah, good on it. It's it's fine. Am I alone?
Yeah, I think that it's actually a good idea as well. But I think the big thing for them moving forward is making sure that they have the best titles possible, because I went through their free-to-watch thing, and their banner page, like if you go to their free-to-watch page, the number one movie there is Secret Agent Cody Banks. That can't be like your highlight guy. You need to have a better couple movies in that front grouping. And they do have like Rocky, Terminator, Legally Blonde, and a couple other movies that are generally agreed upon to be good. And I would watch them because they're not on every other streaming service. But they need to expand that repertoire and definitely fix their featured page to show like movies maybe only an 85 and above in Rotten Tomatoes.
I mean, that's going to be the challenge because Netflix, first off, it's hard to find a movie on Netflix anymore. They just they don't really stuff them on their main page. You got to go search for it. But when they started to transition from movies to original content, the movie selection was pretty bad for a while. And then I think they invested and they got some pretty good movies and they started getting movies pretty quickly after release. Like I was shocked The Last Jedi was ever on Netflix, not to mention like just last year. But with YouTube, I mean, that's always the challenge is like James was saying, it's that balance between paying for content and like what you get back for it. And I like the idea because if something was really good, I would definitely watch it. But at the same time, I'm very doubtful there'll be stuff that's really good on there.
Yeah. Well, you just mentioned it, them getting movies fast. Infinity War is coming to Netflix on the 25th?
That's what I was about to say is that which I do think is a bit of a tease to be like, hey, you like this? Well, guess what? This shit's not going to be on here anymore. You got to go Disney Plus.
Okay. Ant-Man and the Wasp is the last one for Marvel syndication. So it's like, yeah, we got this, then Ant-Man and the Wasp, which is pretty good. And then that's it. Nothing else for you.
Yeah. That's absolutely what they're doing.
Yeah, so interesting move by YouTube there. Next up into much, much more serious news. General Mills wants to make movies out of their monster cereals. Count Chocula, Boo Berry, and Frankenberry.
So it's the monster cereal cinematic universe. Is that all they're doing?
Yes. Yes. Right. So,
I can't imagine it would be worse.
Yeah, they teased a monster universe that never happened, the dark universe, and now they're going to do it out of cereals.
The dark chocolate universe.
Trill, you have obviously the most enthusiastic reaction. What do you think?
It just it feels like such an 80s move to directly link up a product with a movie or TV show.
Yeah, like the Wiz of cereal.
Ooh. Yes. Even like the 80s, everything was designed to move action figures, and now they're starting with the product and making a movie out of it, which they've definitely done before. Angry Birds, right? Like this is not a new
thing.
But this one seems particularly egregious because not only is it a cereal, it's not a particularly like popular cereal. I mean, it's popular in the sense that we know what it is, but nobody's ever going to the store to pick up some fucking Boo Berry. Excuse my French. It's a tier C cereal.
Yeah. Well, I guess like the concept is if you have General Mills money, then like they're not going to make like a, I don't know, what's their flagship, like fucking Trix? I don't know.
Give me a Pillsbury Doughboy movie. No, Honey Nut Cheerios is the B.
Yeah, well, they already have B movies, so they're not going to make that again.
Lucky Charms. I'm surprised it's a Lucky Charms movie.
The Leprechaun. We just talked about that trailer yesterday or the last podcast. Yeah.
It sucks.
Boo.
I'm trying to be more positive today on the podcast, but there's no way I can spin this news to make it sound like it's something I'm excited for.
Absolutely not. So, and also, I said the Wiz before I met the Wizard. But the other thing is, this doesn't play worldwide because I don't know any of these. Like, I know, and I'd imagine that's for what it is in most countries. And like you even said, they're second tier where they're from. It doesn't make any sense.
Just give me Snap, Crackle, and Pop in their relationship growing up.
Snap! Ooh. We're never going back there!
Cornflakes.
What would be the most popular Australian cereal that they would make? And it's not actually, I can't even say popular because Count Chocula is like well known, but it's not like the most popular. It's only out around Halloween now. So what's like, is there a comparative one?
Probably Coco Pops is probably the most popular. Like all the well known, they're like a kids brand. Fruit Loops. Do you have Fruit Loops with the toucan or whatever? You probably have that one.
Yes.
Toucan Sam. So probably those two. Yeah. But the other thing is those cereals are all terrible. They're all really bad. Like they're bad for you and they taste bad. So
Well, that's not true. Fruit Loops is delicious.
Get out of here.
What? Fruit Loops is great. It's poison. So it delivers extra sugar into the roof of your mouth.
You have to understand, Trill's from the Midwest, and that's basically like you're insulting his holy water or bread of Christ or whatever.
Yeah, that's
what
our whole
into the troughs and then ring the dinner bell, and me and my gluttonous siblings would all waddle down and just eat.
Me and all my greedy adult sons just slop it up.
Kevin! I didn't put this in the rundown, but there's been something that we've been meaning to talk to you about, James, that we're going to finally get to. I'm not going to mention it. It's going to be the last thing we talk about, but it's very much related to American crossover with Australia. So we will talk about it.
When you guys bust in Australia, yeah. It goes straight up in the air.
That's correct. Yes,
it actually goes back in their body.
Jeez.
That's a great ejaculation and is a real medical problem.
It's a nightmare here. I don't want to bring it up, but yeah, it's no good.
Birds of Prey, two more news stories. All right, three more? Three more. Birds of Prey, James, you'll be able to do a better job explaining this. It's the Harley Quinn movie with a bunch of other, like, villain-type things, whatever. It's called this. I'll let you explain it in a second. It's now going to be called, according to Margot Robbie's Instagram, Birds of Prey, and then in parentheses, like Birdman was, and the Fantabulous Emancipation of One Harley Quinn. Remember, Birdman was Birdman and the unfortunate, like,
series of events.
It was, yeah, or like the something. I'll get what it is. But James, can you explain this? Is the title fucking ridiculous to you, or is there a comic book thing that I don't know?
There's always a comic book thing that everybody doesn't know. I don't know what this is from or what in reference this is to. I think I'm not even sure this is the real title, or there's something she just scrawled on there. Is it the real title? Has it been confirmed?
Relation to her. Getting away from the Joker, right? That's what it was.
And it's also the DC universe saying we're getting away from Jared Leto's Joker. So it's, yeah. But basically, yeah. So it's what do we got? Black Canary, Huntress, both I think have been in Arrow they've both been in Arrow. And they've also, there was a Birds of Prey TV series in the early 2000s. But it's basically, it's just a team of female crime fighters. That's essentially it. Yeah. Oh,
they're crime fighters. So Harley Quinn's going to be a good guy.
Yes. A good woman. Yes. she's back and forth, but a lot of the comic book story now is her breaking away from the Joker and becoming her own character. And that kind of thing. So I think that's what that looks like, what this is like, an anti-hero kind of thing. Yeah. Huh.
That's kind of interesting because I think Harley Quinn's Margot Robbie's joke version of Harley Quinn was not terrible, but also just did such a huge disservice with that Jared Leto version of the Joker and just that movie in general. So maybe a step away from that and a step towards super handsome man with nice penis, Ewan McGregor. That just turns this all around for Harley Quinn.
Ewan McGregor was in a Fantastic Beast. He played Dumbledore.
May as well have.
We're almost there. We're almost at Fantastic Beast, a movie we all loved. Two more things. Aquaman ticket sales, the pre-sales topped Venom. Surprised? Anyone surprised here, Trill?
Yeah, I am. Well, I take that back. Maybe not. I'm more surprised at how successful Venom was, but that doesn't necessarily mean Venom overachieved. So I guess I'm not surprised at this. You know what I'm saying? Like, I think Venom made a lot more money in my mind because I originally expected it to make like $25 in a Skittle.
You know what's weird is that the one thing that we really shit on it for was its PG-13 rating, and that probably made it a lot of money in the long run, a ton of money.
It had to.
I think it's going to hurt it in the long term, though, if they keep going down this path. Yeah. But, you know, we'll see. I didn't think it would make this much money, and it fucking did, didn't it?
That's one of those things, like, I just begrudgingly accept, like, most things in, like, American politics where I'm just like, that's just, yep, that's a thing that happened, and I just accept it, and I have to move on.
So Aquaman. No, go ahead, Trill.
Who, do you guys still do ticket pre-sales?
For AMC? Like, for ticket?
You have to, though, because you guys, I mean, Jeff and Ken Jack, I can speak.
I do. I buy early.
Densely populated areas where availability is probably an issue, but I don't, and I haven't. So I never really order tickets in advance unless it's like The Last Jedi. But if it's Aquaman or something, just day of, just order it, get my end cap seat.
You go into day of for Aquaman?
No, but, and I'm just saying, like, I don't go to opening night movies. That's not me, Chief.
I think I'm going to the premiere of Aquaman. I'm hyped up for that movie, to be completely frank. I think it's going to be better than most DC movies, even though it looks like a steaming pile of shit. And I think they know that it's supposed to be like a cheesy pile of shit. And that makes me excited for it. Plus, I love Jason Momoa.
They changed the name of the movie. It's now Aquaman and the Epic Wind Bacon.
The Epic Wind Bacon of King Nereus.
Yeah. It seems like also they're showing it to people already. Like, there's already kind of word that it's good. And, you know, a few critics have seen it or whatever and hinting towards it, it's going to be good. So, yeah, I think they've got confidence in it. But, yeah. I'm with you though. I don't order tickets early unless it's like a really big thing, because I can just go on like 10 a.m. on a Thursday or whatever and there's no one there. It's the best.
Yeah,
so, it is.
You're in Perth, so I mean, there's nobody there.
That's true. I mean, I'm not in Perth.
But in my headcanon, you are. Like, I,
in Australia, do they play the movies from end to beginning?
Yeah.
Benjamin Button must have been very pleasant.
It was, oh, mate, finally. You have no idea.
What did you think about the movie Australia?
It's horrible. It's a terrible film. It's really inaccurate. It's also, I heard from a friend of mine who knew people who worked on it, they reshot a lot of that on green screen. That's why it looks so weird. Like, they went out to these real locations and did it, and then they went, yeah, let's reshoot most of this. And so it's just not good. And the other thing that annoys me is it costs like 200 million. Sorry, you got me started.
200 million?
Something like that. Yeah, maybe it was 150. It was a lot. But you could have done 5-10 smaller movies for that cost, and one of them would have been really good, you know, at the very least.
God,
so
no,
the film industry is,
They needed that David Wenham bag.
Yeah, that's it. But no, it's terrible. Do you guys have thoughts on it?
I didn't like it. I normally like Baz Luhrmann, and by that I mean I like two of the movies he's done.
I thought it was like not very good, but like it was an interesting story poorly told, if that makes sense.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I don't disagree with that. Also, the geography's wrong.
Is it really?
Oh.
Yeah, yeah. I used to live up where it was. It doesn't really matter. That's not a thing anyone cares about. It's the last thing that's, you know, that people should be worried about that movie.
I like how Nicole Kidman finally had a chance to possibly do an Australian accent. She played an English person. That was very cool, too.
But yeah, the last time Nicole Kidman did one was in the 80s with BMX Bandits. You guys are familiar with that movie.
Oh, my God.
Intimately.
All right, last bit of news. First reviews are in for Robin Hood. Has anyone seen the Rotten Tomatoes score before I proceed?
No.
Can we guess it?
Yeah, we're going to guess. Please. We'll go right down the line. First reviews are in. 40 reviews. We'll start with you, James. What's your guess? Rotten Tomatoes critic score?
22.
Okay, Ken Jack?
35.
Out of 1,000. Sorry.
Trill?
26.
It is 15.
Oh my God.
It says Robin Hood robs from the rich source material, but is ultimately just another poor attempt to needlessly gussy up a classic tale with amped up action and modern special effects.
I love it.
That was great wordplay.
Who didn't see this coming? Jeez.
I really wish though there was a scene where Jamie Foxx just looks straight up at the camera and just looks at Robin Hood and then looks back at the camera and then just says, "He takes my money."
Ben Mendelsohn, another Australian, I think. Question mark.
He is.
God damn. Ben Mendelsohn.
Yeah.
Ben
Parker. He's the new Christoph Waltz.
Oh,
he is. Yeah. That's so good. He definitely is.
Thank you.
Yeah. Minus the Oscar, obviously, or two Oscars. Yes.
Two Oscars.
All right. So quickly, I need to address Buster Scruggsgate. We've been doing this podcast now for over a year, over 100 episodes, including The Last Jedi. We have never been raked over the coals as hard as we have been over the last day and a half for our Buster Scruggs takes. Let me just bring you back to what happened. We mentioned that we were going to review it. I watched it. I didn't love it. I didn't say I hated it. Didn't love it. Felt it was not a good movie for us to review because we all weren't big fans of it and we weren't really passionate enough to make it a Sunday review. Ken Jack, you said you skimmed through parts of it, but I know you went back and watched the rest of it.
No, the opposite. I watched the whole thing before you finished it, Buster Scruggs.
No, but you, I know, but not the order of who watched it. But you'd said you fast forwarded, you scrubbed through it. Did you say that?
I fast forwarded one anthology that was just so slow and meaningless that like I wasn't missing anything. Like literally missed nothing.
Yeah. So anyway, you finished it. You watched it. Trill, you made a comment which got appropriated to us. I'm not trying to throw you under the bus, but you did say it. You said this sounds like a movie that critics are saying they like just because they don't want to catch flack for it. We agreed with you, which I'm going to read some reviews, a quick snippets in a second, that blossomed to us making fun of it for a second. Didn't really hate it, just said we didn't love it. I talked about the Coen Brothers filmography, saying they had some bad movies. I was kind of proven wrong. There was not as many, I guess, mediocre as I thought. I still love the Coen Brothers. Did one of my favorite movies of all time. We've been destroyed over the fact that we just didn't happen to love it as much as most people. I would give it, I haven't scored it yet, I'd give it probably low 80s. I just didn't think it was nearly as great as the way people were hyping it up. Probably say high 70s, low 80s. People are giving it like 90s. I just don't think it's anywhere near that good.
I'm in like the 60s somewhere. I didn't like it at all. Like, it's one of those things where I appreciate how it's a good movie, but on a personal level, I just fucking despised it in every facet.
I need to call Court of Trill to order right now, real quick. If you guys are the jury, Jeff, you're not included. Did Jeff just throw me under the bus?
Ooh. Did you say it?
I did say that, but I was referencing a specific review that where someone was like, it was a tough watch to get through or something like that, but I liked it.
You know what? I thought I had said that. I didn't even know you said
but
it.
Okay, maybe I threw you under the bus, but we agreed with you, so it's not your take alone. We all said the same.
Yeah, I watched it last night, gave it 100, so I don't know. you guys are out this limb. I'm over here with the cultured folks.
The point that we made is not far off. I'm going to read just a couple reviews here because this sounds like there are some, not all. I understand if you love this movie. Like, I see the audience who will love it, and I get everyone on our Reddit who likes this movie. Like, I do. I didn't love it, but I know people fucking were over the moon about it.
He's got steam coming out of his ears like a comic book character.
I'm going to read some of these. There's also entirely too much talk and an ending that goes nowhere, but the film as a whole satisfies. Any new Coen Brothers offering is always worth celebrating. That like sums up what we said, basically. That's a fresh review. If you think we're idiots for not liking it, fine. But I will stand by the fact that I think some people said they like this. Critics, at least, because they didn't want to be the critics that got destroyed for not loving a Coen Brothers movie.
Yeah, exactly. Because if you say that, like the way that guy phrased that, like, oh, it's really hard to watch. It sucks. It's bad. But it's Coen Brothers, so it's actually very good. Like, that's a bullshit review.
If my long experience with the Coens holds, where the films that take time to smooth, I'll love Buster Scruggs in 4 or 5 years.
What's
that's
not a positive
review. That's basically that's you punting and saying, ask me about it again in 5 years. But that's, again, that's a fresh review. That's like a positive review.
I think I got like that once.
You got dumped. 4 and 5 years, we might get back together. True.
Yeah, it's not really working right now, but I see someone. You're someone I can love in 4 or 5 years.
Wow.
I'll be waiting, my queen.
The Ballad of Buster Scruggs is one of the strangest and least legible of the Coen Brothers films, but it also revels in their sheer joy in creating movies.
Oh, shut up.
Okay. I'm going to end it on this because I'm obviously mad offline. Look. Yeah, we're big, stupid fucking idiots. I understand that. And we have bad takes here and there. But I'll stand by that one comment that I think some people said they liked it because they didn't want to get destroyed over it.
I'm just here for Fired Up Jeff. I like it. I like it. Fired Up. Because normally
I got more mad about this than I did when people didn't agree on my our Last Jedi thoughts.
Yeah.
Well, I can tell. And I don't hate it. I'm not giving you grief. I wasn't trying to make fun of you and said you're a corn cob. I like the passion. Passionate. You care about if you didn't, you wouldn't be mad about it.
I leaned into it, full corn cob. But yeah. People are like, they hated it. I'm like, no, we didn't. Well, I didn't.
No, it's a totally different ballgame where it's like, objectively, I understand what they did and is good. Like, the Tom Waits sequence was awesome and all that. But like, on a personal level, at my enjoyment on a movie for this, or enjoyment as an entertainment product for this was like zero. Like, I did not enjoy it one bit.
Don't get me wrong. I hate it now, though.
Yeah.
Now I hate it. Now I just hate it.
We need to think of a stand group name, like the Little Monsters for Buster Scruggs fans. like Little Scruggs or something.
The Little Busters?
Little Busters.
All right. Whatever. Hey, moral of the story, thanks for engaging with us on our Reddit. It was actually really good debates about the movie. So when it's all said and done. One more sponsor. This episode brought to you in part by Omax Health. They have so much copy. Omax is offering our listeners 60% off a 1 month supply of Cognitive Boost. Cognitive Boost will give you crystal clear thinking. It's game changing 100% certified and tested supplement designed to fuel peak performance. The pills are like little black pills. They look like something out of the Matrix, right, Ken, Jack? You had some on your desk.
Jet black.
Famous black pill of the Matrix.
Yes, from nothing else. Black pill is also not a nomenclature in incel culture. So let's make that very clear. Let me be clear.
4 out of 5 people say staying sharp is their number one priority as they start getting older. Well, if you're one of those 4 people, buy Omax Cognitive Boost. Go to omax.com/lights today to take advantage of this incredible savings. That's Omax, O-M-A-X, Boost, BOOST.com/lights for 60% off a 1 month supply. All right, here we go. Harry Potter time. Harry Potter and the Crimes of Grindelwald came out. I guess I said I would read synopsises now. James, you make Meso read the synopsis on your show, or you say, what's the movie about?
Yes.
He should just read the Google. He should just Google the movie's name and hit synopsis. Much easier.
What is I just read.
Let's see. Grindelwald synopsis. It's, let's see, you got to spell synopsis right. Do they not have it? They had one for the Keanu Reeves movie. Fantastic Beasts, Crimes of Grindelwald synopsis.
Crimes of in an effort. Corbo Glomberwurz.
Crimes of, as they call him in Australia, gay wizard Hitler, which he really is Hitler. We'll get into that. He's Hitler. In an effort to thwart Grindelwald's plans of raising pure blood wizards to rule over all non-magical beings, Albus Dumbledore enlists his former... That's such a fucking lie. Albus Dumbledore enlists his former student Newt Scamander, who agrees to help unaware of the dangers that lie ahead. Lines are drawn as love and loyalty are tested, even among the truest friends and family in an increasingly divided wizarding world. That makes it sound like there's a lot of Dumbledore in this movie. We'll get into that in a second. Quickly, for no spoilers, off the top scores, really no need to elaborate. Let's just elaborate in the spoiler section. Just a score, and then maybe like a one sentence if you liked it or not. I gave it a 62. That might be higher. I may lower it. I gave Fantastic Beasts like a 55 or 56, I forget. Competently made movie. Looks great. Some of the acting is really good. I think Jude Law's great as Dumbledore. I like Newt Scamander more than I liked him in the first movie. He actually kind of enjoyed him. Grindelwald's good. Everything else is just bogs down what could have been a fun movie. So, yeah, 62 for me.
Yeah, I gave it a 57 out of 100. It's just – it's very beautiful. Like, it's visually very appealing. And outside of that, there's really not much going for it. The entire movie is essentially just a setup for the next one, and it's very transparent in that design. And that is extremely off-putting to me. Like, that – when you could feel that happening throughout the movie, like – they're not calling any of this back. Like, none of this is really resolving. Like, they're, and you, is your time is click ticking down towards the end of the movie. And you're like, oh, they're just kind of trying to leave you in a cliffhanger so you come back and watch the next one. That pissed me off a lot. And that altered my score quite a bit.
Yeah, I gave it a 55. I agree with you guys. I didn't hate the movie. Don't get me wrong. There were parts that were entertaining. There were other parts we talked about it feeling like the prequels, where there just was a lot of talking, a lot of exposition and whatnot. And I really like that. Mm-hmm. I think what I come back to is these two movies I didn't love. I, from what I know of J.K. Rowling, I didn't read the books, but people think she's a great writer, and so I'll believe them. But I'm not sure she's a great screenwriter, because I'm not sure she can write something that's paced well. The thing with this movie is I feel like they could have taken the entire movie as it existed and condensed that down to half a movie and then made another half a movie with it, which goes back to Ken Jack's point, where it's just like there's not much stuff happening from point A to point B. And once you get to point B, it's kind of cool, but then you're like cliffhanger city and shit, like could have just had more interesting stuff happen in this movie.
To me, it was like, it was probably like a 40. I really did not enjoy it. I mean, from casting wise, yeah, it's absolutely dead on. But I feel like it followed a lot of characters, new characters, and revealed things about them that I didn't care about because I don't care about those characters. One of the things I think the last movie did really well was establish new characters in the universe and tell a contained story. And most of the Harry Potter movies, even though it's ongoing, feels like each movie kind of feels like, you know, this is a story and we've told it. That's 1 year. Now it's time for the next thing. But this was just kind of sprawling and meandering. And it was a lot of people following each other around Paris. And then they all stand in a room and tell each other who they are. So I just didn't think it was good. Yeah.
Just like from the Harry Potter movies, you had almost this like built-in pacing mechanism because they were all structured around a school year. And without that, it almost seems – and I read some reviews which mentioned this too, so I'm not going to give credit to myself for this thought. But it seems like those pace the Harry Potter movies pretty well in a lot of them. And this one – that was my biggest complaint. I felt like a lot of not a stuff happened and got to the end and it was interesting, but you had to get there.
It's not the worst movie of the year by any stretch of the imagination. It's not an awfully made movie or awfully made movie. It looks great and there are some good elements, but there's so many obvious parts that signal of why it wasn't good. And we'll get into that right now. I'm going to pause for a second for spoilers.
To avoid spoilers for Fantastic Beasts, The Crimes of Grindelwald, skip to 1 hour, 12 minutes, and 29 seconds. Happy holidays.
Audience gave Fantastic Beasts, The Crimes of Grindelwald a 66 out of 100.
Is that righteous?
I think,
you should be angry at your audience. They get angry at you. That should work the other way.
I went on enough of a rant, but that is actually a little lower than I thought we'd get. I actually thought there'd be Harry Potter fans who buy in. And my thing with this is that we'll get into the J.K. Rowling stuff after we just critique the movie for itself. It's the characters for me. I just don't give a fuck about these characters. And that's even with the fact that I care more about Newt Scamander now. I think they actually gave a little personality to Newt Scamander in this one. Like, he's okay to be an awkward, weird guy as long as you can understand who he is. And, like, I get who he is now. He's just a different guy. You know, he doesn't fit into the norms. And I like that. Like, I enjoyed his scenes where I thought he was so beyond off-putting in the first one that it almost made it unwatchable for me. But the rest of the characters, Leta Lestrange, that should be interesting because she's connected to Bellatrix and connected to Sirius Black and all them. Like, there should be something there that interests me. Nothing. Tina and Queenie, the sisters, Catherine Waterson's character, I don't think they talk once in the movie. And they're in the same room at a couple points. I don't think they have actual lines of dialogue with each other.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think that's you're hit the nail right on the head. It's just a big lack of exposition for a lot of these characters. They try and pull on a lot of different characters to try and tell all their stories. Like, there's a lot of B plots going on. And because they try and tell so many stories, and because there's a limited runtime, you just don't get satisfaction for anybody's stories other than Newt's. And even Newt's stories, like resolution, if you want to call it that, isn't that good either. Like, because what would you call his final resolution? Like, him realizing that he has to pick a side? Like, that's just a fucking setup. That's just a setup to the next movie. Yeah. That's his resolution. Yeah. He's realizing, oh, I need to fight next time. Like, fuck that. That's so stupid. And you don't feel like an emotional connection to any of these characters in the same way you feel in Harry Potter. And I get that, like, it's an offshoot and, like, they're not trying to tell it in the same way in which, like, Harry was the main driver and everyone else was sort of like a tertiary character. And that's why you grew attached to them because of their relation to Harry. And in these, instead of doing that, they just let every single character be their own driver. And that just doesn't work.
Yeah. And that's, again, the characters, they're just flat outside of that. Some feel forced in. Some don't fit, like Credence. He's like, Credence is really the main central point of the movie, and I just don't give a shit about that character. I don't care. I mean, like, he's the character that kind of is running the plot right now. He's obviously revealed to be a Dumbledore. Again, we'll get into the whole connection to the Harry Potter universe and, like, what makes sense and what doesn't make sense. But, and then the last guy, and I'll let you riff on the characters next, is Jacob Kowalski, the Josh Gad character. Absolutely irrelevant and pointless to this movie. He serves zero purpose in this movie. He just walks around and has a quip here and there, and that's it. And he's the example of how this movie is overstuffed with meaningless characters that they're trying to give, like you said, Ken Jack, meaningful B plots that just distract from the story and just don't do anything.
He's I think that they bring him into this universe. Well, the first one they brought him in, I think, so he could be like the wow magic, and you can explain things to him, be like, this is this, and this is how the universe works. But this one, it didn't feel like that at all. It felt like, because he was a popular character, and I liked him in the first one, that he was just kind of along for the ride. But that being said, like, it's the newer characters that dragged it down for me, like the Strange, and the guy who had a squid in his eye, and his mum was stolen. But and he was going to kill the person, but then there was a, you know, the bit where they're explaining the backstories to each other. It was just, yes. they stood in a room and he went, this is my backstory and this is what I think and this is why I'm going to kill this guy. And then someone else went, well, this is my backstory and this is why you should. They just did two flashbacks in a row. And Mason said this on our podcast, but if that first one had been at the start, then you would have understood his motivations. And then you twist it on its head at the end when you go, no, your motivations are actually informed by false information. But it was just like, here's my reason. And then like, oh, no, your reason's wrong. And that was in the space of like 5 minutes. And did he die? I don't remember.
He might have. A lot of people died at the hand of Grindelwald at the end, and it was kind of hard to tell. They just went up in like Avengers dust.
Yeah, true. Why doesn't everyone do the secret blue fire that kills everybody in like a 20-foot range?
Trill, you watched it the last out of all of us, and we kind of hyped up how much we disliked it. Characters for you, especially because you kind of have less of a I guess you haven't dove into the Harry Potters as much recently as we have, or just over time.
I guess like Eddie Redmayne, it was fine. He was I have a mental image of him as a bumbling idiot in the first one, and he was less of that in this one. And then, you know, Johnny Depp's portrayal was interesting. I didn't think he did a terrible job with it. It was one of the more interesting parts of the movie. But aside from that, I imagine having no connection to Harry Potter and then having a character who's Lita Lestrange or whatever, and like that's fan service because you're trying to connect it to an original Harry Potter character, and then me not really having a connection to that, I just don't care at all.
Yeah. Or then there's another character they brought in. They brought in Nicholas Flamel, who was referenced in the first movie. They have I know, James, you guys talked about this when Rogue One came out, when there's a scene of 3PO and R2, and they just, it's kind of like them going, hey, look, Star Wars. That's you know what they do with they show the Sorcerer's Stone in Flamel's cabinet, and it's like
fucking closet, like the thing that's keeping him alive, collecting dust. Like, oh yeah, just remember the Sorcerer's Stone right there in the back fucking closet, you stupid goon, you rube. And
I mean, I'll admit, I did turn to the people I was with. I go, "Oh, Sorcerer's Stone!" But even then, I'm like, "God damn it!" Like they got me. Like I fell for the trap of like being wowed by the little Easter egg. But even then, it's like his character has this vision of everyone dying, and then he just shows up with like the he shows up late. He knows what's going to happen and when, and he shows up like 15 minutes way too late. Everyone, like half the people died already.
And just to clarify, these are people who can instantly teleport, and he was still late. It's not like he was stuck in traffic. Jesus Christ.
I'm trying to think what else. I think the positives, I think we already said it looked great. It did look very good.
Jude Law's great.
That's what I'm saying. I think Jude Law's Dumbledore, he captured, because I saw it again, I think he captured Dumbledore perfectly. I think he had the mannerisms down. He had kind of like the stoic like or about him. I thought he was great. And again, that's what disappointed me. I'm like, I wanted more of that. And James, we talked about it the other day, just going back and forth, getting ready for the pod. I mentioned there really is not a lot of Dumbledore. It's an egregious lack of Dumbledore compared to what is teased in the trailers. Like, you think you're going to get a lot of Dumbledore. You really don't.
And it's a shame because he is really good. And I'm sure we're going to get more of him in the next one or the next three that they're making. But it seems like a waste. And I feel like it could have been he's a Newt's adventure or something, you know, but it's not, it's not. He just mostly just leans against a desk and goes, I'd love to help, but, you know, I'm gay.
I mean, which they don't even explain again.
No, they don't. They cop out.
Like it's alluded.
Yeah, lean into it. Like, everybody knows it's common knowledge. You don't need to be afraid that people are going to freak out. Everybody knows he's gay and nobody cares. So you could just lean into it.
Ooh, it's not even like
– I got a question for Joe Bonds.
What's up, man?
Well, if you had to rank the Dumbledores, Jude Law, Richard Harris, and Michael Gambon, which one are you going with? Which ones do you want?
Who is the original one?
Richard Harris.
I liked Richard Harris, and then Michael and then Jude Law.
Jude Law and then Michael Gambon?
I can't. I just called him Michael Gambit.
Michael Gambit. Ooh, there's our next Gambit movie. Hello, mon ami.
But in my mind, I don't I don't even recognize that there are two Dumbledores. It all just flows in together from the original series.
Yeah, but I always think of Richard Harris as like the Emperor and Gladiator, and like how like cool and serenely old he is. And then I think Michael Gambon being so like eccentric and wacky. I just like I like him so much, or what do you call it? Richard Harris so much more. But I think Jude Law, he's climbing the rankings fast. We'll see how he does in the next one.
Does Dumbledore age really quickly? Is he the appropriate age to be playing Dumbledore?
No, not according to an image on your Twitter account, the podcast Twitter account, where they're, what is it, like 14 years apart?
Yeah, 16 years apart.
Harry Potter? Yeah. I thought the original Harry Potter was in the 90s.
So in the original Harry Potter, they do a flashback to when Voldemort was a kid, when that was in 1943.
And Dumbledore is looking old. See, I was just going off of assuming he was probably something like 200 years old, and it's just been old forever.
Yep.
Now he's like a young guy. He just has to age really quickly. He was that old in the 90s.
It's the X-Men thing, like the Magneto thing. It's the same kind of like – it's the Hobbit thing. Like there's a flashback in The Lord of the Rings to The Hobbit, and then when you actually do those movies, it's – you know, it's a younger guy, yeah.
Speaking of Magneto, what's his name? Ezra Miller's character. I already forgot his fucking name. Fuck, what's because it
was the Credence Bagbone.
So Credence did his first Magneto of what I'm assuming will be another Magneto when in the next movie when he turns good, because he definitely will. But he did his whole thing where he's like, no, I just want to be left alone. And then he's like, oh, actually, I'm bad now. And then he's going to go back, I'm assuming, in the next movie and be like, yeah, actually, I like the good guys again. Because I'm assuming, like, Nagini maybe gets immediately transformed back into the snake forever, which Nagini totally neglected in this movie. Presumably, she'll have more
Oh, my God. I forgot about it. What an irrelevant thing. That goes back to, see, that is the most Star Wars prequel thing out of all of this.
Yeah.
Wholly unnecessary to make that snake a thing. It's a fucking snake that answers to Voldemort. It's his best friend. Like, I get making it a character. I understand why they did it, but that's the most prequel thing. That's like showing Boba Fett. I don't need to see young Boba Fett. I don't need to know how Boba Fett was turned into Boba Fett. Like that snake, so unnecessary and ham fisted in the movie.
Yeah.
No, it's not at all.
Snake, because the snake's personality is just a snake. Like it's just a snake. Yeah. Like if you had told me, you know, before it was this kind of snake, it was a slightly smaller and younger snake, I'd be like, yeah. But like this doesn't add to that. It's not. It doesn't. Nothing engaging about this at all.
Nagini and Jango Fett both had their head cut off. Also, maybe this is all coming full circle.
Yeah. Good point.
That was
That
divided the fan base, didn't it? Like people didn't really like that. Even the Harry Potter fans were tepid about it, right?
Yeah.
There's a few things in this movie that kind of break with some continuity as well. Like McGonagall's in it, but she's like 20 odd, but she was born in 1935 or something, which means she shouldn't have been born when this movie.
How'd she get tenure? How'd she get tenure when she's 20 years old? Like, come on. Even Hogwarts isn't that lacking.
Yeah. So I think they're going to be like, it was her mom or something in the next movie.
But, yeah. They're going to have to because they don't say her first name, but yeah, that would make her 100 something. And in the books or movies, she's like 70 something. So yeah. I think that's, again, that's just a fan service thing. Like, it doesn't serve any purpose. Like, oh, just say the name and then.
That's it. That's all they did, like, to say the name. It could have been anybody.
Yeah, which is J.K. Rowling's thing. It's like not a full committal, which goes again back to the Dumbledore, like, being gay thing is that. Like, I don't even, like, I'm sure there's people who will argue and be like, oh, you're being a social justice warrior. Like, at this point, you've said it a million fucking times. Everyone knows Dumbledore is gay, and you still just won't commit to it in the movies. Like, you're making that a bigger deal than it should be. Just put it in the movie.
Yeah.
Just, like, and that's not, I'm not taking points off for that, but it's just one of those things that, like, it perplexes me watching that.
I'll note, too, that Dumbledore is very handsome, and Grindelwald is not. Like, I think Dumbledore could do much better. Grindelwald's got that weird eye going on, that sort of like Hitler bleached blonde, like Billy Idol mustache and hair combination thing going on. Don't like it. I think he's ugly. I think Dumbledore could do way better.
It should have been Colin Farrell. It makes way more sense.
Oh, that's a power couple.
That's hot.
It does. Yeah, it does. He is definitely, you guys have called him Gay Wizard Hitler for over a year now, I believe. He's definitely Hitler. He kills a fucking baby in the first 20 minutes of the movie.
They just never
kills
call the baby. Back to it. They never call back to the scene. I don't get it. Why did they do it?
I guess it's to show his influence. Well, he doesn't kill it. He just looks at it and then someone else kills it.
True.
And then there's another dead baby later. There's two. That's good.
God damn.
That's right. A baby drowns. Oh my God. That's right. This movie kills a lot of babies. That scene was weird too.
Boy, yeah. Was it.
Oof. On the fucking Titanic. I forgot about that.
I didn't make that connection at all. Of course it is. Yeah.
Wait, what, when did the Titanic sink?
1914? No, wait, no. Definitely before World War One. 1907?
1909.
So maybe it was the Titanic. Ooh. It might have been fucking though. World history callback.
Oh, great reference.
I did like the sequence when they show what will happen if Muggles were allowed to continue ruling the world, and they almost did like a watered down version of the Black Panther one, like their opening sequence, and they showed like every humankind just fucking themselves up all the time. They did that same one except just World War II, and I thought that was actually an interesting sequence, although very recently done with Black Panther.
The way that they saw the future in this, I thought, was really strange compared to the previous movies. I mentioned this in my podcast, but basically in the last one, there was a prophecy, you know, there'd be a prophecy and it's vague and nobody would hear it, and then it would kind of pass the word of mouth. But in this, like, Nicholas Flamel was just looking into a crystal ball and he's like, oh yeah, so that's later today. And then Johnny Depp blows into the skull bong and he's like, so this is the war, it's going to happen in 15 years. Like,
how did we forget the skull bong?
Yeah. Or the skull vape, whatever it was.
Yes, but definitely a vape.
Yeah, so it just, that strikes me as a thing that is strange, that everybody doesn't always know the future all the time.
Yeah, the skull hookah looked so fucking out of place. It just, so it was, we didn't say this word in a long time. It was jarring. It was like, what the fuck? Like, it was just so strange.
Yeah. I can't wait to get that skull's origin story.
Oh, he's like, yeah, fucking sorting hat. Like the fucking sorting hat. Perfect.
Yeah.
That actually, I could totally see that being like the skull of the sorting hat's original owner.
Yeah.
Don't put it past her. She'll do it. And I'm sure she's a lovely person, but J.K. Rowling, I just don't know what she's doing with this. It's just so odd. And the Dumbledore thing, I don't know the books well enough, but I know that there's some people who say he's lying. Like, where do you fall on the fence? Do you think Grindelwald is lying, that Credence is actually a Dumbledore, and like, he was able to manipulate that phoenix to, because like the phoenix coming to help is what ties it together. Like the second that bird was a little red with like a reddish orange hue, I was like, oh god damn it, he's a Dumbledore. Do you think he's lying to him though, James? I'll let you take the first shot.
I did an Easter egg video on this, but basically, what I think it is, I think his Dumbledore sister was an Obscurus, which is that, you know, that black cloud thing. And I think when she died, it attached itself to Credence. So I don't think he's technically related, but I think he's got a piece of Dumbledore's sister inside him, and that's the connection. Yeah, but I don't know or care. So,
the troll, what do you think of the skull bong, troll?
I mean, that was cool.
That's what we were all just saying. We're all saying how cool it was.
I wonder what Johnny Depp was putting into it. It's like mint. Do you think he's like a mango guy?
No, dude. He probably does something like, what was that candle? Lemon peel currant.
Oh. Yeah. I we don't have a Juul sponsorship, but if we did, that would have been a great skit. Would have been a great to do Grindelwald Juul sponsorship.
I can't buy them at 7-Eleven anymore.
Yeah, so
we must destroy the Muggles for restricting our Juul pods.
The nomadges. Awful. Like, I hate that. Just call them all Muggles. Nomadge sounds so stupid.
It really does.
Oh, God. This movie was... It was confusing. That was the other thing, too. Leaving the theater, I hate saying that movie confused me because it makes you feel like a fucking idiot. I was confused when I left that movie. I had to decompress and, like, I had to go on Wikipedia and make sure I didn't, like, miss anything. I was like, what the fuck? What did I just watch? And it's all, Kendrick, it comes back to your point. It's all a setup. The whole thing's just a setup. That's it.
Yeah.
Nothing really meaningful that happened in that movie other than the last 5 minutes, in my opinion.
She's not a screenwriter. You know, I think she is a great author, but she's not a screenwriter. And that's evident in this film, I think. Yeah.
It's like it's a completely different art. When you write a book, you have 700, like, especially a book like that, you have 700 pages to do what you need to do. And this, you got to get something done in 90 minutes. But there were parts I liked. I liked the fights. I liked the stagecoach fight scene. I liked the Harry Potter-like special effects with the zaps and the blasts. Like when he did some characterization of Newt Scamander when he put all the suitcases back together. That was kind of neat. It's like, oh, this guy's a nice guy. And then in my head, because I've been playing Red Dead Redemption 2, I was like, he probably got some honor points.
Howdy, mister.
What?
You know Madges? You ain't like you welcome around here.
Are you, I guess let's end on this, are you excited for the next one, or now you're just like, whatever, when it comes out, I'll see it. I'm not really going to think about it.
The latter.
Me? Am I excited for it?
Sure, all of us.
This is so hard. I feel like it was a fine movie to watch. It was entertaining at parts, but I do not care about Harry Potter. I do not do it. I think Harry Potter is good. From what I've seen about Harry Potter, I like it. I like the movies. I liked all the movies, but I don't have enough connectivity to this universe to care about this spinoff story at all. And continuing on, like, people, the twist was cool, I guess, but it didn't mean anything to me. And it's going to mean stuff to people because it's Dumbledore's brother who's the bad guy now. But for me, it's just Ezra Miller shooting boulders off with a wand.
That was just a weird ending sequence. Just like, boom, end show. Like, all right.
God, he's really powerful. Why don't all the wizards just do that?
And also, he just made a wand, didn't he, at the end? Grindelwald, he just like invented a wand with his hand. I know you could just do that.
I thought he just had it on him. I was like, this is for you.
Unless he revealed it. It looked like he like basically created it with his hand. And then Evander or whatever, the wand guy, he's working on 100% profit margin. Like, is he just making these all with like a spell?
I don't know.
Was Grindelwald referenced in the original movies or books?
Roughly.
Yes. He's also in... Yeah, he's old. He's in jail. Voldemort goes to him and is like, give me your wand, you fucking idiot. And he's like, nah. No, he tells him, he's like, Dumbledore's got it. So, yeah.
Hmm.
That's a special wand that Grindelwald's got. It's like the
Elder wand.
Yeah.
Yeah, which that's also a massive plot. We won't get into that, but apparently that's a plot issue as well.
The Elder wand?
Him having the Elder wand. Him having the Elder wand at that time is a massive plot hole. I've seen many stories.
I thought he stole it. Because you see a flashback of him still. It's not. Yeah.
It's not even.
He has it, but apparently the way it lines up, he shouldn't. I don't know. I just know that one is like the most hotly contested one from this very frustrating movie, which I was excited for some odd reason. Now I'm so excited to see more Dumbledore.
There's this interesting story to come, but this lessened my excitement for those things. I mean, who doesn't want to see Wizard World War II, you know?
That's true.
I'd love to see him in World War II. That would have been pretty dope.
Just Watchmen.
Pearl Harbor, except like the Japanese have the invisibility cloak.
The opening scene to X-Men Wolverine.
Yeah. Oh, God damn it. That's what we're going to get with the new Gladiator 2. Can't wait.
It's going to be good. It's him fighting through time.
All right. Anything else? Or are we done? Are we closing the book on this one?
Do some rankings, baby.
I said 62. Ken Jack gave it a 57.
Yep.
Trebolin's 55, audience 66. All right. Harry Potter rankings. The rankings for the Harry Potter movies. We were gonna go 10 to 1, or we were going to go 1 to 10, but now that I look at it, I think we're going to go... I think we're going to start with worst, because I think we're going to have similar worst. So let's start with the bottom to the top. Because that it's more interesting than I thought it would be. So we'll do 10 through 6, like we usually do. And then we'll go one at a time, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. So I'll start with you, Trill. 10 through 6. And you say you haven't watched these in a while. I want to hear your method. The method to your madness.
So I clicked on the Wikipedia links, and I'm trying, I kind of read about the movies, and I'm trying to remember how I felt when I watched them. So I'm going off of feelings. So I'm going to start right now. Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 1 is my number 10, only because I don't like two-parters very much. I just don't like them. They just make a long movie. Just give me one long movie. Stop trying to milk this book. They did it with Hunger Games, and I didn't like the Part 1. My number 9 was, I think, like the Goblet of Fire. Wasn't that interesting? You got a fiery goblet. I don't care. It's not as cool. It's not as cool as a whole-ass Chamber of Secrets. Number eight, The Order of the Phoenix. I don't know. It has a 78 on Rotten Tomatoes, so I guess that's my new number eight. Number seven is Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets. A little bit better than The Goblet of Fire, but not so much. I mean, Chamber of Secrets is cooler. And then my number six is dang, man. What else do I have left? It's A Prisoner of Azkaban.
All of the Fantastic Beast movies.
Wow. All the Fantastic Beasts are making it?
I don't know, man. I got a special place in my heart. I forgot about them. So I'm going to bump my rankings and just put Fantastic Beasts 2 as number 10 and Fantastic Beasts 1 as number 9. I'm so out of my depth right now. You have no idea, dude. I feel like I just walked into a test and it's the wrong class and I just don't know what I'm talking about.
This is me when you talked about Friends that one time.
Oh, she's just you try to interject and then what you're afraid of is a Reddit just laying into you.
For actually, Trebons, you didn't realize that the Elder Wand was introduced until book 4. You stupid idiot. That's what happened when I said that Harry's a bad wizard. I got ripped apart from that.
He is a bad wizard.
We're going to talk about that more, though.
Okay.
Because that bumps stuff down the list. I'm just going to do my top three from here on out because I do have a top three.
Okay. No, that's very fair.
Reasons why.
Okay. We'll go Ken. We'll go Ken Jack next.
All right, number 10, Fantastic Beasts 2. It was just a movie that existed to do nothing but set up the next one. That's bad. Number 9, Goblet of Fire. Can't skip the Quidditch World Cup. Cannot skip the Quidditch World Cup. It was one of the most interesting chapters in any book in the Harry Potter franchise, and they just fucking skipped it. It was so fucking stupid, and I'm still angry, really angry online to this day about it. Like, me and my best friend went and saw the movie in theaters, almost walked out when they didn't show up, when they just skipped over the whole thing. Unbelievable. And that's the one where Dumbledore turned from being, like, the wise, respected elder to, like, the eccentric fucking weirdo that's just like, oh, I'm a nice, whimsical fucking Dumbledore, and I'm really, I'm high energy, I have high tea, I'm on Omax Energy Boost, Dumbledore. Like, that one. And I don't like it. He turned into Jeff Goldblum. That's not Dumbledore. And also revealing Voldemort to be Snake Boy. That was just... That was just a bad reveal. Terrible reveal. Didn't like it. Number 8, Fantastic Beasts. Boo. Number 7, Half-Blood Prince. Just not really interesting considering it had what should have been one of the most emotional climaxes out of all the movies. I just did not feel it, and that's bad. And then number 6, you guessed it, Prisoner of Azkaban. I think it was a good representation of teen life and like puberty and like that sort of like age for kids, and also combining that into like a magical world, which must have been hard. And also introducing Harry to his family for the first time, like actual family, was, I think they did that emotion very well. Dementors, also I'm very Casey scary. Kasem. Wait, play it again.
I'm Casey Kasem.
That's a good reference. That's a really good deep cut reference. I right. like that.
Okay.
That's a good one.
Okay, so after you guys finish your lists, my contribution here is I'm going to pick a soundboard drop.
Deal.
Love it.
Okay. James, I'll let you go next. 10 through okay. 6.
10 is Fantastic Beasts 2. It's a bad movie. Number 9 is the original one. We call it Philosopher's Stone here because we're cultured, you know?
I still feel that.
But I think it's a good kids movie, but it's not a good movie. And I think it's also not a good movie to watch if you're an adult. Number 8, Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets. A little bit better. I like the conclusion with the giant snake, and he fights a giant snake or whatever. But I think the kid actors are still fighting their feet. It's still not that engaging of a film. But again, a good kids movie. Number 7, Harry Potter, the third one. Everybody loves this movie, but I don't think it's very good. I think it's a turning point for the series visually, but I just think it's not great a film. Number 6, the original Fantastic Beasts, which I quite like.
I mean, the Prisoner of Azkaban thing is we'll get into it because it's not going to be in the audience's bottom five, so we'll get into it maybe a touch more just for a brief moment in this because we've teased it for weeks now. Number 10 for me, easily The Crimes of Grindelwald. Number 9, much higher than number 10, is Fantastic Beasts, Where to Find Them. Number 8, Goblet of Fire. I'm with you, Ken, Jack. I do not like Goblet of Fire. Skipping over the Quidditch World Cup is bad, but the stuff actually in the movie, not great either. I hate one of the characters. He's going to be on my bottom three list. And I think just, I actually like the Voldemort reveal. I think it's a cool moment when you finally get to see Voldemort in his full form. But the ball, what's the dance that they all go to called? The Triwizard Ball is just deplorable. It fucking so sucked. The
deplorable is a great fucking adjective for Harry Potter. How dare you show these kids dancing, sir?
The music or whatever, like what band do they have performing? It's a famous band.
I don't know if it's that one.
Who is the band that performed Band in Goblet?
I don't remember.
Of Fire. Hold on. It is the never mind. They're called the Weird Sisters. I thought it was a real band.
That's right. Yeah.
Here, the performance. You want to hear it?
Yeah.
I found the simple life. It's so simple.
Oh my God. That was haunting.
It was David Lee Roth.
Without the music, that's like haunting. Oh my God.
You never heard that before?
No.
Isolated vocals running with the devil.
No, that's so scary.
You got to go check that out. It's one of the better YouTube videos.
All right, I'm going to watch that later.
I hate that scene. I think that dance party scene, like where they're like at a rave almost, is almost as bad as Spider-Man 3, where he's dancing down the street. It's cringy, very cringy.
They should set it to the I Can't Stop thing from Great Gatsby and just make it into like an actual rave scene. That'd be pretty good.
Sorcerer's Stone number 7. I like it. Just I think you're right, James. It's very kiddish, and the same with Chamber of Secrets. I don't like them as much as the ones that begin to evolve later on. Save Goblet of Fire. Audience, here we go. Number 10, The Crimes of Grindelwald. Good on you guys. I like that. Number 9, Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. Number 8, The Order of the Phoenix.
Wow.
The lowest ranked. There were a ton. This was our second most voted on thing we've ever done. Thousands of votes. It was a little over, let's see what it's at now, a little over 16,000 votes. One of the most voted on things we've ever done. Number 7, The Sorcerer's Stone or Philosopher's Stone. And number 6, The Chamber of Secrets. So that's the bottom five, which the Order of the Phoenix one really surprised me. So we'll see where they go after that. Troll Ballins, we'll skip you for number 5. You already have Chamber of Secrets there. Ken Jack, what's your number 5?
My number 5 is Philosopher's Stone. I thought it was a really good one, and I think it was one of the best starts of a franchise in movies that there could have been, and especially for the graphical or CGI limitations of the time. It was made around like 2000. I thought it was great. A lot of, I'd say, technical difficulties they had to overcome, and they did it really well. The casting, obviously dynamite. Like, they nailed the casting so much. And this is from somebody, as you guys know, I read all the books like way ahead. Like, we had a best friend from Ireland, and they shipped over Philosopher's Stone from Europe before it came out in the U.S. and said, you have to read this. So I was really geared up for this movie, and I was a real asshole kid. So I was definitely going to hate it if it wasn't like the books. And it was dead on with the books. It was perfectly, like, perfect representation, I thought. Loved it.
I mean, it was in my bottom 5, but I still enjoy it. I had a good time watching it recently. So next up, James, number 5.
I put Half-Blood Prince. There's two movies here that I think kind of just move the story along, and they're fine. But I think what makes Half-Blood Prince better than the previous ones for me is they do some good Dumbledore stuff in it. I agree that his death isn't really, I don't really feel anything. I'm like, yeah, okay, he's gone. That's okay. But the stuff you see him prior when he's doing actual magic and him and Harry go on a little adventure, that part from that movie really stands out to me. And that's why it kind of bumps it up for me. Yeah.
Half-Blood Prince, I'll get into that one, but I think an easy top 5 for sure. My number 5 is actually Prisoner of Azkaban, higher on the list than when I initially roasted it. I don't love I don't really love the pronoun game in this one that they play. Mm-hmm. It's him, he's the villain, literally. Remus and Sirius are shouting that at each other. like, kill him, get him. And you're like, huh? And then James, you said it too. I think in your, when you guys reviewed it, you're like, the villain's just a, it's just a fucking rat.
Yeah. And then afterwards, when, you know, Sirius Black is just manic and crazy. And then afterward, he's like, Harry, do you want to live with me? Do you want to live? I'm just a crazy homeless man. Do you want to live with me?
That just try to, yeah, like, just try to extraditionally murder somebody. Want to come live with me?
Yeah.
Yeah, the antagonist setup of this one, just, it's just weaker than the other ones. I think that's just what it boils down to. Audience number 5, The Prisoner of Azkaban. Go figure.
Oh, wow. Okay.
The way they fucking, they defended it, they only put it at number 5. That's bad.
I assume our Reddit, our like very dedicated followers probably had it higher. But overall, with all the votes, that's where it landed. Trill Ballins, number 4.
I cannot remember these movies. Prisoner of Azkaban.
Ooh, okay, there you go.
Okay, Ken Jack, we'll go to you next. Number 4.
My number 4 is Deathly Hallows Part 1. It's good acting, really good setup, I guess, for the second one, if you want to call it that. I agree with Trill in that I don't think it was entirely necessary to split it up into two parts. In fact, it probably detrimented it, I think, how I look at it retroactively in the long run. But it's just a good movie. Solid acting. I think it was very well shot, for if that makes sense. The tones that they used in it, I think, worked really well for the sort of despair, desperation state they were in.
Yeah, it was. It's a great-looking movie. And I think it's going to be talked about in a little bit here on the rest of these lists. Some more. James, number 4.
Order of the Phoenix. It's good. It's my least favorite book. It doesn't really kind of have a point, but it does a good job of growing a lot of the characters. Like Harry grows as a leader. I said he's not a good wizard, and he's not. He's mostly, a lot of the time he wins just because he's Harry Potter. You know, and he's just got the magic of love or whatever the fuck. But yeah, you see him grow as a character. You see the other characters grow. You start to see Neville grow. You start to see the kid actors grow, become, uh-oh. It's the Prisoner of Azkaban police.
It's the Dementors.
But,
oh, it's just getting closer, so don't just take.
Oh, he's muted himself. Okay. He went on mute. Yeah. So I think it's, it does a good job of fleshing out characters and making kid actors more adult actors. And kind of taking charge. That's what I like about it. It's a good fight at the end between Dumbledore and Voldemort.
Yeah, that's my number 4 as well, because I do like the end. The end is what lifts it up for me over Prisoner of Azkaban. I do think the whole end scene of he's back, and then when he says, you're a fool, Harry Potter, I do love the end there. I think that last fight, it's a big tease to the final movies. Great back and forth between Harry and Voldemort. I do really like that last scene at the British Ministry, what is it?
Ministry of Magic.
I almost said Ministry of Defense. Yeah, which was, it wasn't Fantastic Beasts. They showed the French one and they showed the British one. Audience number 4 agrees with Ken Jack, Deathly Hallows Part 1, the first. Okay, Trill Ballins, number 3. You said you had an actual top 3.
My number 3 is the Half-Blood Prince, because I really like the Snape storyline. That was something as a Harry Potter normie that I really enjoyed, and I love Alan Rickman, and that was good. I like that twist. Yeah, that's my number 3. There's only 3 I remember really well, because they're 3 scenes that really stand out.
So Half-Blood Prince, your number 3. I like that pick a lot. Ken Jack, what's your number 3?
My number 3. Before I forget on dogs, didn't Grindelwald himself, Johnny Depp, get detained in Australia for bringing dogs there or something?
Correct. Yeah. He illegally brought his dogs here, and some fuckwit politician from here was like, we're going to kill your dogs, Johnny Depp.
What?
Yeah, they threatened to put him down.
They threatened to put them down unless they made that apology video.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, and if you ever seen that video, it's so bizarre. Yeah,
what the fuck? Because it does look on the video like they're being held at gunpoint or something. But I guess it was their dogs being held at gunpoint.
It looks like a Taliban video.
That was wild. Yeah. My number three is. Wait, play it.
You have a collect call from.
That's one of the all-time prank videos. Number 3 is Order of the Phoenix. I think the final fight scene, like you guys mentioned, was awesome. Dumbledore in like his first real action moment versus none other than Voldemort. And I thought that the scene where Harry gets possessed by Voldemort, while I think they could have shot it better, it almost looked like he was like constipated or something, and they gave Voldemort that weird face behind the bad CGI green screen thing. But I thought the possession itself was really emotional, and the way that they framed it, like him overcoming it through like love, blah, 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 was really, really good. And I think also the fight scene, like with Sirius Black dying, super emotional and also just cool. That like weird like apparitions flying up, the ghost things flying all over the room fighting each other. I liked it a lot.
Yep. James, you're number three.
My number three is Harry Potter 7 Part 2. So the last eight. So number eight, whatever you want to call it. The last one. I think it's a really good conclusion, but why it's not higher up for me is because the conclusion in the book is Harry Potter defeats Voldemort in front of like all his friends, and he explains how it kind of happens. But here they just kind of shoot their wands at each other and nobody's around, and then he turns to dust. So I think that was the moment, I think, for Daniel Radcliffe to kind of do some, you know, I think his acting gets better in the movies, and I think that could have been a really standout performance, but they just go, and they shoot one, and then he dies. But it's a good movie, it's a good conclusion. Yeah.
Yeah, he's a great villain, and too, Voldemort hits his peak there. I really like that movie. Number three for me is the other Deathly Hallows Part 1. It grew on me. I didn't love it at first, but I thought the character development and the way it was probably the most different from the others, because it was the one where they really spent the most time away from the school. That is why it just kind of stuck out there. And I think the performances are maybe the best in that one, as they are, because it's the most character driven moments. So I really like Deathly Hallows 1. That's my number three. My top three are all really close to each other. Number three for the audience, Half-Blood Prince. Number three. Trill, number two.
Number two is Deathly Hallows Part 2, because I thought that fight was pretty neat. And it was just a nice way to wrap it up. Although I don't like the prologue. I know that was in the book where, you know, they get married to each other and they all drop their kids off at Hogwarts. That was a little too... I didn't like the aging up. I couldn't buy Daniel Radcliffe as a dumpy accountant.
That's not in my canon. I don't view that as actually part of Harry Potter. I strike that from the log. It feels so out of place with a movie that was like actually considered one of the best of the year is released.
Yeah. They're going to reshoot that when they do Cursed Child, when they make that into 17 films. So because that's where that story starts.
Oh my God, what was that?
Sorry, I accidentally clicked that. The David Lee Ross soundboard is my new favorite. That was one of those things that felt like that would have been really cool in a book, that prologue, because it ties it up nicely.
It was.
The visual execution of it was just really weird, because they're like people in their 20s and they're trying to age them up 15, 20 years.
And Ron's, it looks like stage makeup, like a high school kid when you go and they've drawn stubble on them.
Like comparison.
Some 16-year-olds playing Willie Loman in Death of a Salesman.
Ken Jack, I think you're next. Number two.
My number two is Deathly Hallows Part 2. Like you guys are saying, one of the best movies of the year it came out. It was a phenomenal final fight. The Battle of Hogwarts was great. Really good special effects considering the scale, how much that was upped. Like, it was usually all the fights were pretty small scale, like maybe like 5-on-5, whatever. And all of a sudden it's like hundreds on hundreds. And I thought that they did that really well. And it was a very satisfying emotional conclusion outside of the aged up old Harry Potter that I don't even know what job he could get because he's such a shit wizard. Like, what could he even do? He's like a fucking plumber. I don't know.
James, yours is next, but you agree with Ken Jack that he's a bad wizard.
He is. He definitely gets better, but a lot of his skill just comes from because he's Harry Potter. Like, the way he was born, he's part of a prophecy and his mum protected him with a spell and whatever. But yeah. Harry Potter 4, The Goblet of Fire. I know everybody seemed to hate this movie, but this is the turning point in the franchise where I actually was started to like these movies. There's a few reasons. I really like the introduction of Voldemort. They kill Cedric Diggory, which I think is a really powerful moment in the films. They build up this new character and he's really charismatic and everyone loves him and the audience loves him, only for him to be killed. And then his father, you know, finds his body after he's dragged back to the school. The acting's much better from everybody in this movie, I feel. And also I love that they make Harry Potter compete in a series of super dangerous sporting activities that he should not be in. Like, he just shouldn't be involved. They should make him sit out, but they're like, let's just see what happens. Let's see if the villain reveals himself. Let's make him fight a dragon.
They don't say what the consequences are either. Even in the book, they don't say like, oh, if you don't compete, you'll die. They just say like, oh, if you get picked, you have to compete. They don't say like there's any consequence if you just don't do it.
Yeah, exactly. Also, I love that they interrupted an entire school year for four students.
For like fucking Olympics, of course, yeah. In a sense.
Number two for me, Half-Blood Prince. And then number two for the audience, Goblet of Fire.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
That's like, I think Goblet of Fire was every book reader's nightmare, but I think for every casual moviegoer, like, yeah, I could see how you'd enjoy it.
Yeah.
You get a lot of the, I think the emotional scene with Dumbledore is what you talked about earlier, Ken Jack. I think you see it a little bit between Snape and Harry. I think more than maybe just a Dumbledore part. So I've always liked that. I think Half-Blood Prince is the darker one where you really, I just think it sets up the next two well while still being a good movie on its own. So I do like Half-Blood Prince, but I also kind of get where you're coming from there.
It's also my least favorite number, book, to be fair.
Okay. I can't read well. So, all right. Number two for the audience again, Goblet of Fire. Number one, Trebons. It sounds like you're going with the OG.
I like the OG. That was a fun movie to watch because that was my introduction to the Harry Potter franchise. And while it didn't really hook me on the film series or the books or make me want to read the books, it still was a really fun world. I was really into it and it made me want to see the rest of the movies. I just never got into them. Like they're good movies, but, this just had a lot of like, at the time it came out, it was like 2001. There weren't a lot of like young lit fantasy movies. It pioneered that genre for the most part. And it was a delightful film.
How old were you when it came out?
16, I think. 17.
Yeah. Okay. So I guess it kind of like, for me, I was, I think 10 when the first one came out. No, not even, because 2003, I was 10. So it was, yeah. So like I was still like right in that perfect grouping. I thought I was going to get a fucking letter. That's how stupid I was.
A letter?
Like the Hogwarts letter. Because you get it when you're 11.
Yeah. Ooh, dude, that would have been big if you would have gotten one of those. Is your parents just playing a joke on you?
Oh, man. Oh, it would have been brutal. I wish they did do that now, though, because it would have been a good story.
I really thought you were going to dive into thinking you were a wizard as a kid.
No, I never thought I was a wizard. I thought, like, there's just a possibility I get the letter. All I wanted was that letter, and it never came. I wonder what I actually got for my 11th birthday, but whatever it was, it failed in comparison to finding out I'm a fucking wizard.
Definitely.
That's the thing is, there are a lot of Harry Potter fans of all ages, but there's a special place for those who grew up with it. And I think it takes on more meaning when you have something as a kid, and especially if it's like seven movies over 7 years. And Ken Jack, you watch that from your 10 until you're 17.
Yeah.
Like it takes you from being a kid to being a horny teenager.
All the way through.
Yeah. I mean, that's a lot of development happening in those times. I feel the same way about the Final Fantasy series.
Not Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles?
But I could talk forever about Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
But I feel like we owe you a podcast now, Churl. Like one of your choosing of a franchise that like we don't know anything about, but you're super deep in the lore on.
No, I like this podcast. I was listening because it was a refresher on what actually happened in the movies and some of the lore. It's hard to keep track of all these characters if you're not into it. There's a lot of people in these movies. It's like Game of Thrones.
Yeah. Not as many deaths.
Ken Jack, number one.
My number one is Chamber of Secrets. I think it was the most true to the books, which is a very asshole thing to point out, but it's just true. And it was also, I think, the most magical, if that makes sense. It was the most one where you feel like there is magic happening and you feel like really connected to that like whimsical sort of nature behind what really is like a kind of childish and stupid concept. And if you really think about it, like that's one where you feel really connected to it. And I really just bought into it with that movie. And I think it was some of the better performances in the whole franchise, especially from them in their kid stage. Like obviously Philosopher's Stone, they weren't very good. This one, I think they grew up a little bit more and got better. Kenneth Branagh was a great Lockhart. If you ever read the books, I thought he did a phenomenal job as him. And it was the last performance of the great Richard Harris as Dumbledore, who I still think is the best Dumbledore. He was perfect, old, wise, which is what he was supposed to be, not this energetic, yuppie, hipster guy. And I loved him. Thought he was great. And I think it was, out of all the movies, the best blend of school and, like, his adventure life, if that makes sense. Like, you get a good grasp of what he has to do, like, as a student, and then also getting thrust into this world of fucking, like, nightmarish proportions that he just consistently is thrown into. So I think that blend was really great. And every other one, they sort of mixed it up too much with, like, at most of the rest of them, 20% school life and then like 80% adventure.
I'm Team Gambin. Team Michael Gambin.
Don't like Gambin. I don't think he's a good Dumbledore. Not a good representation. Well, again, it's a book thing, though. So,
I agree.
Well, James, I know your number one. You have a video on it on YouTube, I believe, recently, right?
I do. Yeah, I did a 13-minute video on Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part One. And just in summary, why I like it is because it is all those things that you guys have been saying, how it's, you know, they shouldn't have split it into two, and, you know, it ends on a cliffhanger. All that is true, but I think it has the best performances. It's got the most emotional moments in terms of the character interactions, and also things like Dobby's death, which is really heartfelt. Where they infiltrate the ministry is a fantastic scene, really tense. They bring back a lot of, characters from the past, like Dolores Umbridge and Ollivander, who hasn't been in a film since the first one. I really like the book as well. I like that section of the book because most of us just sitting in a tent just going like, what the fuck are we doing? And I really enjoy that because it gets away from the school year storytelling model, which I really like. But I think what serves this movie well is you know that model and then it throws it away. So without that structure, they're just kind of pinwheeling, not knowing what to do. And so that's why I think it's my favorite movie. Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's great for sure. It's easy top three for me. My number one is Deathly Hallows 2. I think those two movies are fantastic, and they're what is kind of so impressive about the franchise. I know they were based off really good books, but they were able to make good movies and make them better in a sense as they went along. They were able to take good source material and turn them into some really good, solid movies, especially something so goofy and like, what? It's magic, right? Like, you see so many franchises fail, like something like Divergent or Transformers, where it's like, it's a leap to make it into a believable movie. And this took the same people and grew them over the course of however many years, and the same actors, you know, turned into these great movies. And so Hallows 2 for me, definitely Hallows 2 for the audience. So across the board, I have Deathly Hallows 2 with the audience. Trill has Sorcerer's Stone. Kenjek has Chamber of Secrets. James has Deathly Hallows Part 1 as the best. And we all have the same worst, Crimes of Grindelwald. Top three, bottom three Harry Potter characters. We don't have to go too deep into these. Kenjek, who are your top three characters from Harry Potter?
My top three characters, number three, let's start with number one. My number one is Lupin, Remus Lupin. He's a werewolf. Mm-hmm. Badass as fuck. He's got facial scars. I mean, what's not to like about that, right? Number two, Fred and George, I'm giving him a combo slot. They're just badass pranksters. Like, they're just incorrigible. They're constantly getting into trouble. And honestly, at the end of the day, they help out a lot. RIP in peace, Fred, wherever you are. And then number three, Lucius Malfoy. He's got so much swag, and he always is consistently coming through with the drip, and he looks like $1 million. And he's very rich, which is also badass as hell.
Trill, are you going to punt on your list?
No, my top three, Ron Weasley, number three, Hermione Granger is number two, and Harry Potter is number one.
Hell yeah. Okay.
Damn.
James, top three.
Mine is McGonagall. I think she's a great teacher, a good no-nonsense teacher. It's the kind of teacher I think that you kind of hate at the time, but in hindsight, you're like, that teacher taught me a lot. She keeps the school going when, you know, Dumbledore dies. You know, she's kind of the face of Hogwarts, even though Snape's in charge. I think she's just an underrated character, and I'm glad she showed up in Fantastic Beasts 2, The Crimes of Grindelwald. Hermione is great because she's just a legitimately good wizard, but she's also good because she works at it. Or witch. Because, you know, she doesn't fumble her way through it. She learns things and they'd be dead 10 times over if it wasn't for her. Best is Neville, because he came from the least. It's not really touched upon in the movies, but in the books, his parents are tortured to the point where their brains are completely fried. So he's like Harry Potter. He's basically parentless because of Voldemort. Wasn't him that did it. It doesn't matter. But anyway, but then he comes so far. Like, he's just this goof and everybody hates him and he's tripping over his own feet and he's bad at everything. But by the last movie, he's Henry Cavill.
Yeah, so super handsome.
And he's running Hogwarts. Like, he's the Harry Potter when Harry Potter's fucking camping. Like, you know, he's doing it.
He just becomes Henry Cavill in the last movie. Like, wow, what a glow up. My number one through three favorite, I like Snape. I think that's the Alan Rickman effect, though. I think it's an incredible character. Dumbledore, number two. And I actually think the Jude Law Dumbledore added to it. I like Dumbledore as a character, except for the one. What's the book where he doesn't talk to Harry?
Five.
The Half Blood Prince.
Yeah. No, I think he does ruin shit.
Next one. Next one.
It's Order of the Phoenix.
Yeah.
Oh, right. Yeah. Okay. His lack of telling Harry anything always kind of ruins things for them. But I still like Dumbledore. And then McGonagall 3. McGonagall is the example of why Jacob Kowalski is a bad character, because McGonagall supplies plenty of one-liners that are very funny throughout the series. And she has like a lot of good lines that make you laugh and cuts into the tension, yet she's still a serviceable character. So she can do both. I like McGonagall. All right, Ken Jack. The audience. Favorite hit characters, number 3, Remus Lupin. Number 2, Harry Potter. Number 1, Sirius Black.
I saw that coming.
Yeah. Ken Jack, quickly, bottom 3.
Number 3, Harry. He's basically the Frodo of the franchise.
They're mad about Harry being ranked so low. All right, continue.
So here's the thing. Harry is essentially the Frodo of the franchise. He's made great through the actions of other people and just gets all the credit. And my comparison for him is that he's essentially like playoff Eli Manning, where he gets MVP and all the credit for it, even though he only had one or two good plays and his defense held a 35-point-per-game scoring offense to 14 points. Like, he is not the main driving force of his team consistently winning. He's just made great by everybody else around him. And I don't think that makes him a good wizard. I think that makes him a shit wizard.
That's a great argument. I have nothing to say against that. Great argument.
Number 2, Cornelius Fudge. Just the worst person at his job at all times.
Like, he does suck.
He's just awful. Just a terrible wizard and a terrible politician. Just the fucking worst. Number 1, Snape. Snape is a cuck. He basically eats... Snape would eat out James Potter's nut out of Lily's Chamber of Secrets. So that's my final ranking of Snape. Snape the cuck, 0 points for me.
Going back to the audience mailbag last episode, that might be the most vile thing that's been said on the podcast. But
oh my god! But it had to do with movies.
Good on
topic. Oh my god, Trill. Okay, bottom 3.
The third is Bobson Dugnut.
yes. Top Gonzalez. Where is he?
Yeah, I didn't really like his contribution. And he's a tertiary character at Hogwarts and Slytherin, but he didn't really add much. The next one is Anatoly Smorin, another wizard who was at the Tri-Wizard County Fair. And then the first one is Daryl Archibald. Daryl was the worst. He was the worst wizard of them all.
Yeah, hard to agree with you, Trill.
Yeah, a few honorable mentions for Willie Dustus and
Todd Gonzalez.
Onsen Sweeney.
Great picks. James, bottom 3.
Ron, but only movie version because he's useless. He's from magic. He's from a magical family. He should have an understanding of the universe and how it works, but he doesn't. He doesn't know anything except chess. And even then, he didn't get off the horse when the horse exploded. So, Ron. The movies don't do him justice, though. Snape, also, but not dissimilar reasons from what you said. But I think what annoys me about Snape is he changes sides for love. Like, he does it for one person, which, I mean, he's still doing it for the right reasons. I mean, he's still doing a good thing, even if it's for selfish reasons, but he's just such a prick. Like, he just doesn't need to be such a prick all the time, but he is. And the last one is Dumbledore's, because he just doesn't tell Harry Potter anything. Like, he's basically fattening up Harry Potter to be murdered by Voldemort. He knows that. He knows that the entire time. And you think he's just this nice, jovial wizard that's, you know, he's trying to help Harry Potter. But really, he's just funneling him into a situation where Voldemort's going to kill him. He didn't know he was going to come back from the dead. I'm pretty sure he didn't think that was going to happen.
That was a risk.
So, it was definitely a risk. So I just feel the way that they keep Harry Potter in the dark is kind of, if that was me, like if that happened to me, I'd be fucking furious. So... Yeah,
That's a good list. Snape, I'm kind of sad that Snape's on so many lists because I had him on number 1 of my favorites. Number bottom 3 for me, Peter Pettigrew didn't make mine, but he does stink. Number 3, yep. Barty Crouch Jr., the villain in Goblet of Fire.
Dunk.
It's Dr. Barty Crouch Jr.
Doctor Who.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't like Barty Crouch Jr. Number two, I don't like Lucius Malfoy. I think the guy sucks.
He's rich and he's got that he looks drip. So good.
I mean, yeah, he looks great. Guy sucks though,
and he's rich.
He's a wimp. And then number one, this is obvious. I telegraphed this from the beginning. Jacob Kowalski, awful character. I mean, the most useless character in this entire franchise. Bottom three for the audience. Number one, this is normie answer, Dolores Umbridge. But I think she serves her purpose as being an annoying character.
Yeah.
Dobby, number two. Jeez.
No.
I don't like Dobby.
Dobby's no. Definitely.
You don't like Dobby?
Yeah. He kind of slows Harry down.
Why don't house elves revolt against wizards? I feel like they're much better at magic for the most part. Like, and a house elf would easily fuck up Harry Potter. Like, easily.
Yes. Yeah. Number three, Ron Weasley. All right. Long episode. We hope you enjoy this for Thanksgiving. I want to say one thing to James. James, we are big fans of the very authentic Australian sit-down chain restaurant, Outback Steakhouse. Yes. We've never talked with you about it. Trill... myself and Ken Jack, we're big fans. We just want your thoughts on Outback Steakhouse, how aware you are of their items and what they're called too.
Okay, there's a few things I know about this. I've never eaten there. Well, they don't have them here because nobody would go there, because in Australia, Australian restaurants are just called restaurants.
They just call it steakhouse there.
They just call it steakhouse, yeah. But I don't know what a bloomin' onion is. Like, that's not a thing here. Well, give me some other menu. Give me some other menu items, some traditionally Australian food.
Is it the Ayers Rock New York strip steak?
Yeah, the Ayers. Yeah.
Ayers Rock and New York.
Okay. Alice Springs chicken is another one.
Okay. Alice Springs isn't really known for their chickens, but okay, sure.
Aussie fries.
Just fries. Just regular. I don't know. Thing is, Australia doesn't really have Australian food because we're just a mix of everybody. So all our food is international, pretty much. Yeah. Mm.
Would
you say kookaburra?
Yeah, kookaburra. Kookaburra wings.
Yeah, that is not an edible bird. So.
Are they like pigeons of Australia?
No, they're like a friendly native bird that you can kind of hand feed. They're really cool. Yeah.
Let's see. You have I'll give you two, then Troy, you can give another one. Tassie's chicken bites? Is that what's that?
Oh, Tassie. That's Tasmania.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. And then the Brisbane Caesar salad.
The Caesar salad. Is it? Yeah, it's Brisbane, yeah. But the Caesar salad is an Italian or American salad? Issue? Yeah. That is great. Is it good? Is it good food?
Your fans,
good.
They're bread. Best bread in the chain restaurant game.
I'm going to have to check it out, man.
What about a Vegemite ice cream?
That sounds horrible. I love Vegemite.
It's pretty good. It's pretty good.
Is it? Is it like salty?
No, I made it up. It's not real.
Okay.
Right. Okay. Trill, do you have any more?
No, I'm just looking at the menu, and under their salads, they don't have names for the salad. It's the blue cheese wedge salad and the blue cheese pecan chop salad. Or maybe those are the side salads. Yeah, look at like, what are the
signature salads?
They call their appetizers Aussie tizers. They also have Gold Coast coconut shrimp.
you just call them tizers there.
Yeah, we call them tizers. Yeah. We don't have shrimp here either. We call them prawns.
Okay.
Nobody says shrimp. Yeah,
they have great coconut shrimp there, to be honest. Okay. Great coconut shrimp.
Okay.
I'm hungry for Outback.
Yeah, me too.
Oh, here we go. This is grilled chicken with Swiss cheese, bacon, lettuce, tomato, and honey mustard. The sweet Chuco Mine sandwich.
What?
What? How do you spell that?
Chook.
Oh, chuka. It's like a good thing.
Oh, okay.
Like, yeah, that's – or chook. It might be chook as in chicken. I don't know. I don't know what that is.
Oh, we're such a good country.
There was a joke in The Good Place, a TV show. Yeah. James, you know The Good Place? Have you watched it?
I love it. Watch it every week, yeah. I'm up to date.
When they're in have you seen the episode where they're in Australia?
Mm.
And they go to an American restaurant, like the equivalent of Outback Steakhouse as it would be Australia, and all the tables are states, and they're like, we're gonna sit you at Florida or something like that.
That's a great show.
It's awesome.
I think that's it. I think we got all of them. There's one there's New Zealand lamb.
in the Sorry. Outback Steakhouse.
Yeah.
Trying to do an Elon Musk face.
Yeah, good radio.
You see, Mr. Rogan, the Wellington beefsteak is actually quite delectable, even though it is not exactly in the Outback.
Many people think that if you go to Outback and you get the filet, it's the best steak for the best price. But if you get the filet medallions, you get good filet, similar portions, and you also get a bed of rice.
I'm building a tunnel from my house to the restaurant.
That's it, I guess. We'll rattle off three more. Queensland chicken and shrimp pasta, Drovers ribs and chicken platter, and then what is that? Is that anything?
Drovers, they herding. You move cattle over a great distance.
They have Drovers here too.
Australia. Yeah, of course. Yeah, you would. Yeah,
We should make our own.
Yeah, hopefully next year. Hopefully. But I'd love to check out an Outback Steakhouse with you guys.
Make your way to New York. We'll go to Outback.
Yeah. That'd be awesome.
We'll record from an Outback.
Oh, 100%.
They'll let me do it too, because it's my
you
country.
Have to. So
I'm legally allowed to, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I can't wait to see the look on your face when you get your first Bloomin' Onion. They're so good. Unironically delicious.
There are no rules there, so they have to let us record there.
Yeah.
Good episode. We gave you a longer one to enjoy as you travel. Thanksgiving, because we released this early. Make sure to go see Creed 2. Ken, Jack, and I loved it. We hope you love it as well. We have an interview with the director, Stephen Cable Jr., on Sunday with our episode. James, thanks for coming on the Weekly Planet. Anytime. Subscribe if you don't already. Yeah, you get three podcasts a week. Hey, this is a crossover of two of the top five TV film podcasts. People dare not come at us. This is the most serious group of movie discussers on the internet, hands down.
You can't go past it. There is nothing better.
No. And you know where to find him, at Mr. Sunday Movies. The Avengers trailer is coming out soon. You're going to want to follow James for that. He'll have a good breakdown of the little that they actually show. Have a happy Thanksgiving. On behalf of everyone here, at least, when's Thanksgiving? Do you have a Thanksgiving in Australia? How does that work?
No, we don't have Thanksgiving. Yeah. We all meet in the town square and we punch each other. That's what we do for Thanksgiving.
I guess on behalf of James as well, happy Thanksgiving for Trill, Ken, Jack. Our guest, James, we'll talk to you on Sunday.
Have a good week at the box office and your parents' house.